results I can afford to be. This is small town music, this is big town music. He's ahead of his time, you know, but he can't use it. If only he could prove it. Well, tomorrow's just a song away, a song away, a song away.
Hey everybody, welcome to Rock Solid, the comedy podcast for all things music, both new and classic. I'm Pat Francis. And joining me in the Zoom room as part of Rock and Roll Hall of Fame's class of 2022, please welcome guitarist and founding member of Eurythmics, Mr. Dave Stewart. Hello, Dave.
Hi, how are you?
Nice. I am good, Dave, and congratulations.
Thank you very much. I know it's interesting because we're also getting inducted in the Songwriters Hall of Fame on June the 16th, but that was meant to be two and a bit years ago before the pandemic. So now we've got a double whammy, as they say in Britain, two in 1 year.
A lot of activity. And this is your second time on the ballot for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Last time was in 2017. And you guys are number four on the fan vote list this year. That's got to make you feel great.
Yeah, I mean, considering we haven't really released anything or played live for years, apart from like just before the pandemic, we did a show at Christmas with Springsteen and Sting. And and that was great, you know, it was like really the sparks were flying again. And then all of a sudden it was the lockdown and like everybody, we're lucky in the creative world, you know, because we're in a studio or you're doing your show and we can kind of carry on, you know, it's not like we're working in a restaurant or whatever. But I was founder of two creative members clubs, one in London, huge one called the Hospital Club in Covent Garden, and one in LA, and they both shut down. So that was a bit of a drag. It was a meeting place for lunatics, basically.
And Dave, where is your home right now? Where am I talking to you from?
I'm in Nashville. I'm actually had to move into my studio here in Nashville because the power went out in the house. I don't know why, but we got quite a lot of that here. I was quite surprised, but a lot of power outages, especially when there's bad weather, but it's really sunny and hot outside.
So you never know.
Why.
It's all you musicians making music in Nashville. You're drawing all the power.
Yeah, it's all the racket we're making, yeah.
So the last Eurythmics album was 1999. So over 20 years and the fans still come out for you. They vote. The music still means so much to us. I mean, I'm just so excited. Every time I voted, Eurythmics got my vote. So I'm glad that it worked out this time.
Oh, thanks so much. Yeah. I know, well, there's a lot of Eurythmics fan sites, as they are with many bands and acts, you know, and you know what music's like. It becomes like a soundtrack of their lives when they're at college. And, you know, we did make a lot of albums in a short space of time. So I think about nine albums came out between 1981 and 1990, and then another one in like 1999.
Right.
So, you know, so that's quite a lot of music, and fans all over the world have never stopped, you know, making Facebook sites and even websites. There's one, Eurythmics Ultimate, that has every single thing that it's like an impossible task. He's got thousands and thousands of scanned articles and everything Annie and I have done separately and together, and they create these Christmas countdown things and all the other fans join in. And they often talk about, as most fans of bands do, the albums or the songs that are not the singles and not the big, you know, if you're a fan, usually you go deep into the world and discover little gems all over the place. And, so that's a nice thing, really. So I've every now and then I've looked at, you know, what's happening out there. And then this has kicked off a flurry, as you can imagine.
Yeah, for sure. I'm excited because you are finally going to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame with all these other artists that you've worked with, John Bon Jovi, Stevie Nicks, Mick Jagger, Tom Petty, Aretha Franklin, Daryl Hall. You've worked with all these people that are already in there, and now you get to join your contemporaries. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I know. I had that pointed out by the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame when it happened. And I was like, oh my God, yes, all these artists and other ones in there that I've worked with and had not just worked with, but great relationships with, you know, to this day. Obviously, Tom passed away, but. Even just not long ago, I did It's Good to Be King as a kind of tipping my hat when they did a sort of online celebration, you know. And with Mick, you know, we're always in touch, and Stevie,
yeah,
always in touch. And that was a great moment, wasn't it? And George, you know, who I was great friends with, George. In fact, I just remember, because all of this stuff's coming up now, in my house in LA, George was living there and I was in his place in England. Mm-hmm. And when I went there, I'd been also filming Dylan. And so when I went there, there was Dylan and George and Jeff Lynne and Tom Petty all in my back garden. And then the next thing, the addition was Roy Orbison, and then they recorded the whole Traveling Wilburys in my back garden, basically. So it was pretty insane to know that, coming from a little, you know, well, not so little now, town in northeast of England, where I'd be listening on my dad's record player. My brother, who was older, had bought the first Bob Dylan album, and I was listening to Robert Johnson, King of the Delta Blues singers, because my cousin had gone to Memphis and sent a box with it. And so the same thing, you know, when I made Deep Blues, the movie, and being down in the Mississippi Delta with, you know, R.L. Burnside and people, it is, you know, it is quite dreamlike, you know, when you look back on it and you go, God, yeah, I was actually there sitting on the front porch with R.L. Burnside. I'm like, oh yeah, I was there, saying to Aretha Franklin, oh, can you move a bit further back from the microphone? You know, it's like crazy.
It's crazy. Yeah, I wanted to ask, in 1987, you produced a couple tracks on Mick Jagger's second solo album, Primitive Cool. No, it's sitting down on your butt. The world don't owe you. No, it's sitting down in a rut. I want to show you. Don't waste your energy on making enemies. Just take a deep breath and work your way up. Less work, be proud, stand tall, touch the cloud. Man and woman, be free. Less work, kill poverty. You and Mick are peers now, but, you know, growing up, you, of course, are listening to the Rolling Stones. When you're working with Mick Jagger for the first time, how long does it take for you as the fan inside to stop thinking, my God, that's Mick Jagger?
Yeah. Well, similarly with George, you know,
of course,
Bob Dylan.
Absolutely.
But, with Mick, you know, I was friends with him for a long time before he made that album. We would, you know, he would come around my house, or we were fans of blues music, you know?
Yeah.
And so same as Dylan, walking dictionary on blues, early blues, you know? But the time when I, there was one time I remember, and I've got it on a recording because I asked Mick and a lot of other artists, including Tom, to actually make some new music for this six-part TV show I'd created called Beyond the Groove. And it was about the guy who had lost his way and he drove across America and came across all these strange people acting. And it was played by real, you know, artists from Little Richard to Tom Petty, right? And Mick was in my house and he was playing on the piano, Memory Motel.
Hannah honey was a peachy kind of girl. Eyes were hazel and a nose was like a curve. We spent a lonely night at the Memory Motel. It's on the ocean. I guess you know it well.
Yeah, love it. From Black and Blue.
Yeah, and he's like going, sha-na-na-na, and playing the piano, and the sunlight's coming in through the window in London. He's playing my piano and sort of rehearsing it and singing it. And I just was, fucking hell. it's Mick Jagger playing my piano and singing this, like, amazing classic song. And similarly, you know, when Bob Dylan called me at about 11 o'clock at night and said, hey, Dave, do you want to make a film tomorrow, you know? And like next thing, I'm shooting him with a top hat on with my 8mm cine camera and we're wandering through Camden Town. And there was a moment when I said, Bob, I'll tell you what, walk across this bridge because there was a crowd following us and we forgot, you know, we didn't have any, you know, people guarding us, you know, like tour managers or bodyguards or anything. And there's me and Mick Jagger, and I was already, you know, this is past the peak of Eurythmics and dealing with a top hat, so recognizable.
Right.
So the crowd was coming, so I thought, well, let's make it like the Pied Piper. So I'm lying on the ground with my 8mm cine camera, and I've got Bob coming over this little bridge juggling. And a crowd of people behind him, and I told them, just step over me. I told them, just step over me, you know, like the crowd.
Right.
Great bit of film if you want to see it. It's on YouTube called Blood in My Eyes.
Woke up this morning feeling blue. Seen a good-looking girl, can I make love with? Blood in my eyes for you. Hey, hey, babe, I got blood in my eyes for you. I got blood in my eyes for you, babe. I don't care what in the world.
That's surreal. You on the ground, Bob Dylan juggling, people walking over you. I mean, you can't make this up. This is rock and roll.
Yeah, and at that moment was another moment when I went, fucking hell. I'm asking Bob to sort of juggle and walk over me while I'm lying on the ground with this like little 8mm cine camera. It looks great, though.
I'm fascinated that Bob Dylan knows how to juggle.
Yeah, so was I.
Perfect.
Because he just said, okay.
The songs that you co-wrote with Mick on Primitive Court are some of my favorites on the album. I just wanted to point out, Say You Will, I think should have been a bigger hit than it was. That's a fantastic song.
Cast all your fears aside and say you be, say you be mine. And stay with me until the end of time. And help me grind this meal of life. Please say you will, say you will be mine. And times and customs may change, and life may get dizzy. My heart is deep in the country, but I live for the city.
And I also want to mention that you and Mick won a Golden Globe in 2005 for Best Original Song for Old Habits Die Hard from the remake of Alf P. And that's also a great tune.
I thought I shook myself free. You see, I bounce back quicker than most. But I'm half delirious. It's too mysterious. You walk through my walls like a ghost. And I take every day at a time. I'm proud as a lion in his lair. Now there's no denying it, no decrying it. You're all tangled up in my hair. Old habits die hard, and old soldiers just fade away.
Yeah.
I wanted to back up you. You know, you mentioned Tom Petty, obviously a great loss to the music community and for you as a friend.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about how you came to work with Tom, because you worked on the Southern Accents album. And at that time, Tom really wasn't collaborating with outside writers. He would mainly collaborate with just Mike Campbell, and the rest he would do on his own. How did you come into the Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers camp?
Well, the how that song, you know, the video and the single Don't Come Round Here No More, why I suggested it's a Mad Hatter's Tea Party, because that was my thinking about arriving in LA and what happened building up to that song was so like walking through the looking glass, you know. It's like we played in a theater in Los Angeles, and we were starting to be huge, you know, Sweet Dreams, and a lot of people came to check out Annie. You know, a lot of people thought Annie was you know, a black soul singer,
right?
You know,
of course.
And so a lot of female artists came to check out Annie, and there was a lot of musicians basically going, who is this group, and why, and how are they going to be, you know? And they didn't realize we were a full-on band.
Yeah.
We were a duo, but we had played a lot, and we had players. And so it was, in fact, when we played that night, Sam from Sam and Dave leapt on the stage and was dancing and singing, and it was very chaotic. And Stevie Nicks was backstage, invited me if I wanted to go to a party at her house, and she had her two backing singers in a car. And I said, okay, but when I got there, there wasn't a party. It was like a gothic type of house in Beverly Hills or somewhere. And so I didn't bring my itinerary. There's no cell phones. It's 2 a.m. So I just found an empty bedroom and crashed out there. And so from then on, I don't want to go too deeply into it, I became friends with Stevie, but somebody came around in the morning she didn't want, and she was saying to him, hey, don't come around here, you know. So I wrote the next day in San Francisco, "Don't Come Around Here No More," the chorus, and with my sitar guitar, and made a whole track.
Don't come around here no more. Don't come around here no more. Whatever you're looking for. Don't come around here no more.
When I came back, I played it to Stevie, and she was being produced by Jimmy Iovine. She came in the studio, but I didn't know they'd broken up, but they were still working together.
Okay.
And so there was a bit of sort of acrimonious sort of feeling, and she started just reciting Shakespeare over the songs. Jimmy was getting really mad. So he said, "Oh, fuck this. I'm going to get Tom Petty to come down here." And I witnessed one of the great sort of rock and roll discussions where Tom was going, "Hey, no, I'm going to do this song. When you did this to me with Stop Dragging My Heart Around, ended up on Stevie's record." And then that was huge. And then, you know, my record was like stuck. So we went to his garage instead. And recorded it with Tom singing it.
You don't come around here no more. You don't come around here no more. Whatever you're looking for.
Now, the band were probably confused. Here's me playing all Indian-y kind of
right
sitars on southern accents. And like,
yeah.
They're like, "What the fuck is this?" And I look like somebody from, like, you know, an English Edwardian novel or something. And but it turned into this big part of his show live, and it became a very famous video. Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a... It was definitely a change in the Tom Petty sound for that song and the other couple that you helped with on Southern Accents, but it worked. And now it's a Tom Petty classic. So
yeah.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you. Yeah. It changed the attitude to playing live as well. It became more of a bigger show, but I actually love, you know, when it really goes into me, I love the Wildflowers album where he went back to, you know, just very playing in a circle. And you know, I just love everything about Tom Petty. In fact, every artist you've mentioned, I love everything about them. So
well, that's great then that you got to work with these people.
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah. So Dave, here's a question I have. You brought up Annie's voice. It's one of the greatest voices in rock and roll of all time.
Absolutely.
Out of doubt. I often wonder why you guys never did a James Bond theme. Were you ever asked to? Like, Annie's voice is tailor-made for James Bond theme, and your writing credentials and producing credentials, I feel like this is a match made in heaven. Were you ever approached?
Absolutely. I mean, we were right in the middle of our career, and, you know, the Broccoli family, mm-hmm. they set up a screening for me and Annie. And Annie was against it from before even seeing the screening because she just didn't like those kind of movies.
Okay.
I obviously, you know, my kids later on, like my son was obsessed with James Bond. I had to get him to meet him and all that stuff. But
yeah.
I was, you know, because back to Shirley Bassey and all of the epic Bond songs and the arrangements and the whole, you know, orchestrations you could do. I really wanted to do it. But she turned it down. Now, later on, I wrote with Joss Stone, a James Bond, when they launched it as a PlayStation James Bond game.
Yes.
It was by any chance. So I sort of made one with Joss Stone. She sang it and we wrote it together. And it has a huge orchestra and it really sounds like a Bond epic, yeah.
That was a question I've always wanted to ask because I just felt like that would have been perfect. Let me ask about the actual induction. Do you guys know who's inducting you yet?
We don't know at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame yet because that's been very recent. But the Songwriters Hall of Fame, we do. Okay. I'm not allowed to say, but all I can say is I'm a massive fan. But that's all I can say.
Okay, that's good. I assume you guys will play at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction.
Yeah, and at the Songwriters Hall of Fame. Yeah, both, yeah.
Do you guys, you've been talking about what songs you might play that night. Can you give us any hints on that? Is that top secret?
Well, you see, Annie and I, it's interesting for, I suppose, the average person. I mean, not average, but I mean the person who just hears music on the radio and so forth. Sweet Dreams, obviously, has become like Happy Birthday. I mean, it's just everywhere all the time in a million different versions by tons of people. So it would be a miss not to perform that, right?
Sure.
At the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Backwards or forwards, you've got all those Here Comes the Rain Again and Would I Lie to You and Sisters Are Doing It for Themselves, Missionary Man, like they're all slightly different. Like Here Comes the Rain is with a big Gretsch guitar and an orchestra and
I want to talk like a
you know, and then what I liked, it was like Stacks R&B. But Missionary Man, Would I Lie To You, and Sisters Are Doing It For Themselves, for instance, have all got this soul, R&B, rocking kind of thing. But Sweet Dreams can be also done in many ways, as people have proved that. So without saying anything, I think I mentioned a few songs that...
Yeah, that we'll probably that hear probably that night. Be.
Yeah.
I have to mention that, you know, oftentimes on a Eurythmics album, you guys would share vocals. And one of the songs that I really love is from 1986 from the Revenge album. The song is The Miracle of Love. And I just love how your voice is just kind of right in there with Annie's. It's really terrific.
Mm. How many sorrows do you try to hide in a world of illusion? It's covering your mind. I'll show you something good. Oh, I'll show you something good. When you open your mind, you'll discover the sign that there's something you're longing to find.
The miracle of love will take away your
Yeah, The Miracle of Love, it's interesting because Annie was on holiday somewhere and I'd written, you know, The Miracle of Love will take away your pain when the miracle of love comes your way again. And I'd the chords and the structure and how it goes to the verse, but I didn't want to do anything till Annie came back. And then she wrote this brilliant lyrics for the verse and melody. And then she said, well, because she'd heard me singing the chorus to her, hey, why don't you sing on the chorus, like just like you did? And it gives it this kind of top and bottom kind of warm feeling. And the crowd, you know, when we played that, it became so popular. Often we'd end the whole show with that.
Yeah.
And the crowd would be kind of tearful, you know. It was, I don't know, it's a song, it's kind of like a healing song, you know.
It's a fantastic song. It is emotional, and I can understand why the crowd would feel that way. Let's talk real quick about Sisters Are Doing It For Themselves. This only went to number 18 in the US, and I would have bet money that this was a number one single. So going back and looking at the actual charts, I'm shocked that it only went that high. I really am, because that was all over MTV and all over the radio. So I don't know what these other 17 songs were that were keeping you out of the top slot.
Yeah. Well, you know, that year, we weren't on tour that year, and we didn't really do any promotion of it. The video was one of the only videos where we're in a separate location. Like, I was in England, and Annie was in America, and Aretha. And so, but I think it's an evergreen song as well. I mean,
for sure.
More relevant now than ever. And it started to become an anthem then, and it's grown and grown and grown. And it'll be around forever, that song, I think.
Now, when you recorded that song, was everyone in the room together?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, for a start, you know, I made the track, funnily enough, because I was working with Tom, and I knew Benmont, this amazing Hammond player, and Mike Campbell. I love the sound of him playing through a wah-wah solo. So I made the track. It's a mixture of the Heartbreakers and me, and I think probably Nathan Watts, who was Stevie Wonder's bass player. Nathan East, I can't remember.
Nathan East.
Yeah, probably and, him on Nathan Watts. And
Stan Lynch on drums.
I remember. It's like a Heartbreakers.
It is.
Backing track with me added. And then Annie came in. You see, this was late on the album, and Annie sort of written a poem. And I was like, well, I think that's a poem. I think it's a great song anthem. And I was in a tiny little room with her, and I started doing this, actually. I started going. You know what I meant? It would start off. Now, there was a time. And Annie started singing, and I just went straight to the through the chord changes. That's it. Now there was a time when she came in, and literally we wrote the song in 5 minutes.
Wow.
But that's then incredible. It was like, yeah, then it was like, hang on. Somebody who was in the room listening to the playback of what we thought was the finished album, and I can't remember if it was Clive Davis or somebody else at the time, was going, well, this could be a great duet. And then we were sitting around thinking, and when Aretha was mentioned, we were like, oh, we'd never get Aretha. That'd be an impossibility. And next thing you knew, we were on a plane to Detroit. And went into a studio. And while we were recording it, the groove was so big, you know, that I remember George Clinton coming downstairs off from somewhere. He just walks in and goes, like, what the hell's this? Like, what's going on? And Annie singing with Aretha, and the room started to fill up with different people. And we all, and Aretha as well, was really digging it. And everybody was, oh, yeah, this is something. I did a crazy thing on that record to make the groove happen. I wanted a shaker that was like 10 times bigger than a shaker, you know, like a maraca. So I was looking for tins and pencils and, you know, anybody got any coffee beans and all that. So I was shaking this thing. It's like full of all sorts. And I'm going, and then I was going, oh, I couldn't play it, you know, because it was so unmanageable.
Yeah.
So I thought, right, I'll know what. I'll get the noise gate to when it opens up the hi-hat, you know, it makes the shaker happen. So it was totally in time with the hi-hat and the drums. So it was like a weird trick that I don't know if anybody had done that before. It was before you could sequence things, you know?
Yeah.
So, and it made this monstrous groove. I think that's where George Clinton came down. It was like, what's happening? And it's a great groove when it starts.
Is that your favorite part about being in the studio? These experiments that just happen out of nowhere, finding new sounds and how to make new sounds?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm working with a lot of people all the time. And I was just in a studio. Actually, I have a studio on an island, and Bono and Edge were just there doing stuff that I think is just being announced. Bono's book, maybe. But anyway, then I was writing songs with Daryl Hall there. And yeah, we're using all sorts, you know. You wouldn't believe it. Big marching band drums, and then, oh, let's just like stand it on its side and like bounce a rubber ball off it and like all sorts of stuff.
So cool. Dave, I could talk to you for days. I'm so glad to have the opportunity to talk to you today. The next time you have a solo album out, maybe we'll come on again and we'll get into that, because you have great solo material. Annie has great solo material. And as a fan, I'm just so excited that you guys are getting into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I'm based in Los Angeles. I plan on being there that night, and I might even try to track you guys down and say congratulations in person.
Thanks so much. Well, Tony, is this coming out? When is this interview coming out?
Probably a couple weeks.
All right. Yeah. Because I have a triple vinyl box set coming out on May the 20th. And it's got two vinyl EPs in it. All songs written during the pandemic. So like 24 songs. And it's the store. It's going to be a movie as well. And it's about about 6 months in my teenage life.
Well, people, go seek that out. Do you have a title for that project?
It's called Ebony McQueen.
Ebony McQueen. I do want to touch on one song before we go. It was on the last Eurythmics album, called the album's Peace from 1999. It's a song that I just love so much. It's called 17 Again. And I've talked about it on the show many times, but I just love the way you guys incorporated Sweet Dreams into it. It's just perfect to me.
It's funny because we're singing, it was because we'd come together to actually record again after a long 9-year break.
Yeah.
So part of the song is about, and it feels like I'm 17 again. But then it's also talking about the way everything has changed in music and the way that it's now being sort of consumed and used in all sorts of things, and how about celebrity. We did this in 1999. We're talking about celebrity had been taken over everything else, and so Sweet Dreams is anything that gets you on the scene, you know. It's like,
yeah,
there's lots of lines in it that are actually prophesizing, I suppose, of this vision of something's gonna come. And you know, the internet was on the tipping point of, and we could see this going out of control, which it has, actually.
It has. It absolutely has. But the good thing about it is we can do stuff like this. So there are positive things about it.
Always. There's both sides.
Exactly. Dave, let me tell people where they can find you. Your website is DaveStewartENT for entertainment.com.
That's my company, but my Facebook is just facebook.com/DaveStewart.
All right.
And Twitter's the same, or Dave Stewart Eurythmics on Instagram.
On Instagram.
All of them will have the link to the box set. And my single actually comes out tomorrow.
All right. Well, I can't wait. I didn't even know, but I feel stupid. I didn't even know about this project. And now I'm going to head over there and get it.
Oh, great. All right. Well, yeah, it's the first song coming out. It's not really like a single, but it's me looking back on everything and how that blues record that I first heard changed my life and how it became the Excalibur that led me all the way here.
And what's the title of that song?
Ebony McQueen. It's the title song.
Everything. Okay. So I normally ask my guests to choose a playout song from their career. I feel like that should be the playout song.
Well, yes, it should. It's very Beatly, and it's got, you know, when I was a teenager, can you imagine, 1964, I'm 14, and I discover music and a guitar. And yeah. I put on the radio, and it's the Beatles and the Kinks, and my cousin sends a blues album from Memphis, and my head exploded, basically. And it's all, my head explodes on that song, you'll hear it.
Well, Dave, it was so great to talk to you today. I just want you to know that your music has also made our heads explode. So continued success, congratulations, and thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much. It was great talking to you.
You too, Dave. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye.
Ebony McQueen, I think I met her once inside a time machine. She was working on an island made of green, and she already knew everything about my story. Ebony McQueen, she speaks my language, fills the spaces in between, so I don't need to talk, and all I do is dream. And I've been dreaming for a long, a long, now I once loved a girl. She brought magic to my world. Now she lives all alone in my dreams. And the last time we met, we listened to an old cassette, and the sound of her voice reminded me of Ebony McQueen. I think I met her once inside a time machine. She was working on an island made of green, and she already knew everything about my story. Ebony McQueen, she speaks my language, fills the spaces in between, so I don't need to talk, and all I do is dream. And I've been dreaming for what is love? What is time? Just a moment, but it's not mine. They belong together in my dreams. What was real to me is whatever I thought it could be. And the love I think I met her once inside a time machine. She was working on an island made of green, and she already knew everything about my story. Ebony McQueen, she speaks my language.
That was weird. The whole power in the studio and the house just went pew.
Yeah, I was like, oh no, am I frozen or is Dave frozen? So I'm glad we worked it out.
I disappeared completely.